Since we still have another hour.
We do have.
I have a 20-minute talk.
Yes.
Could we take could we use the time, have 5 minutes or a four-minute break, get some brains back? I would love your attention, but 2 hours is a long time, and I'd also love us to just bring everything into one space. So, I'll give you 4 minutes, but I have a question for you in this break. Well, I'll give you 5 minutes. All right. So I'll time it. My question for you as we begin, and then set up the room. You're welcome to dash the blue, and that's okay. We put that down. I spent the whole week making a presentation. I had my coaching this morning, and it's been great. Okay, there we go. So, all right. So, my question for you for the next 5 minutes is to ask, what would an ally to your and our evolution actually do? So, think back to Gail's question as well, as you asked about climate change and that image of the baby and how we are learning. So what would our ally actually do for us? So take 5 minutes, and if you can move everything into a single circle, I just observe it and use it as a tool that might guide your thinking in some way. So I'll hand them out.
Thank you. Okay, so maybe you gradually want to come back to the room, to yourself, to the chair, to the workshop, and
I since I'm in the science track, I really tried hard to make this a scientific talk, but I failed. And I've spent months producing all sorts of really complex diagrams, and it was approaching some kind of Ken Wilber-esque giant tome. So it's utterly useless right now in a 20-minute, or actually much less than 20-minute talk. But this, in the process of researching this talk, I have done what I hoped, perhaps, is I've evolved my own practice and found places where I need to evolve as a person. I may have a chance to share some of those with you, but I'm going to share what I can of this context that I have find myself swimming in for the last few months while trying to get you a 20-minute linear talk and failing. But essentially, I began with the hypothesis that we need to forget about artificial intelligence being a product of some geeks in a lab writing code. The code, the software part of artificial intelligence is actually a rather minor element of the bigger picture. And so my hypothesis was that it's not the software that matters, it's the organizational structures and the algorithms that we use within the organizations that will actually create the artificial intelligence at the end. So the algorithms, we call them, that we use as organizations, whether they're within the software or not, are not made up in the programmer's head. They are based on how we actually do the job. And so based on that, it's like my fear and in thinking about these incredible systemic problems that we face and issues like climate change, that sort of stuff, I realized, my sort of hair stands on end, as I said, we are looking at ourselves as being, at the beginning or having begun the Anthropocene, this geological age where humans are affecting our planet. And this has been done, primarily in the last, let's say, 60 years with incredible technologies. But I feel that artificial intelligence is a quantum leap, a significant step forward in the power of the technologies we are creating. And if we have done this much damage and influence on our planet and our society with old school linear technologies, artificial intelligence is a next order systemic technology that if we don't get a handle on now and we don't understand and fix our relationship with, we are, just taking these grand extinction level events and bringing them straight towards us. So that's where I came from. I explain my work as I work with organizations to fix their relationship with technology, using this technology as a reflection to find humanity. So as many people say, the kind of all this teal organization stuff is often a Trojan horse. You go in saying, yes, we're going to fix the way you work with technology, and we end up showing them that they have to become more human. So coming from that, one of my clients was a small startup looking at artificial intelligence, and so I ended up delving into this and going, oh, shit. And so I hope to continue this conversation over time. This is the beginning of my thinking. And so I'm looking to find others to show me where to look and to add more to my tomes of giant scribbles as I go. So I hope later on to learn something from you. So I'm going to cover a few things now. I need about 10 minutes. I'm going to try to do this in 10 minutes. So the basic concept that artificial intelligence mirrors our social structures. That's where I'm going to begin. I may have covered that. But using that, I would like to propose to you what has changed in my practice, in that I found that I have changed what I believe an organization to be and what its purpose is. Then I'll show you very quickly the structure of a neural network, which is the magical technology that has made all this AI possible in the last 6 years. That's it. Although they've been around for longer, it's only been practical in 6 years, and we've gone from zero to self-driving cars. So, to self-driving cars. You know, this is a baby technology, and it can achieve that much. But then, what can we learn from this technology? It is a systemic technology. How can we learn from it? How can it be our teacher? And then my basic rant about systemic tools and maybe we just need them. So with not much more detail, I'll go through those topics again. Oh, and at the end, I would like to ask you, we'll partake slightly and share a little about going back to that question. So when we build an organization, what we're doing in our linear mindset is we are creating a set of algorithms, sequences of actions. We do this, we do that, then we go there. So those sequences then define our organizational structure. They, you know, each sequence in the assembly line has a corresponding department in your organization. And this mirror of tools and civilization has been around all the time. Humans and their tools and their social constructs we're completely interlinked. It's a systemic relationship. We create the assembly line, it changes us, we create something else, it changes us, and we go around and around. So what we're doing at the moment in this baby stage, this imprinting, stage of AI, is it's imprinting from us. Artificial intelligence, and I'll get to a little later, it's only started to work when it has not been programmed. We've only by giving up on this idea that we can program something with logic and then build neural networks to mirror the way babies learn, have we found that we've solved all these big technical challenges. So if we have an organization that operates by, no matter what its purpose is, okay, purpose for these is purpose and morals are something you must stay far away from when coming up with and looking at artificial intelligence. It does not listen to purpose. It listens to what you do. Artificial intelligence mirrors what's there. It's not listening, it's doing what you do. And so with all this talk about purpose is okay, but it's how you go about executing your purpose that really matters with this technology. If you do it, if you organize your processes by making people stand in lines, controlling their time, giving them 30 seconds to do something, trying to move things in straight lines, and those algorithms, which generally in most of our organizations are about controlling people, even if it's some grand NGO that wants to solve these problems, their mechanism, the way in which these organizations work, is controlling humans. Control their time, job descriptions, limit and focus. So that action, no matter what the purpose is going to be mirrored. So our job, if we are to be bringing awareness of artificial intelligence into reality, and we are the programmers of artificial intelligence, not those coders, it is how we relate with each other and how we get the job done that really matters. So this led me to the big the shift in my practice. And that came down to what's the purpose of an organization? What is the way in which an organization can function if I were, you know, with the vision that what I'm going to be doing in a few years' time is there's going to be this tool that watches, mirrors, and amplifies. So artificial intelligence amplifies our actions. Any tool does. But artificial intelligence takes it up another quadratic level of the equation. So each action, each thing you do will be amplified by artificial intelligence coming soon, everywhere. This is a ubiquitous technology. It will appear in every device, everywhere, and they will all be connected. So this is not, R2-D2, this is an organization mind. It's a city mind. It's a country mind. Perhaps a global mind. Your actions and your interactions matter. So what kind of organization would we want this thing to mirror? So what this has led me to do is say, well, and I teach innovation practice and help people, solve big technological problems and come up with different solutions. And actually, we kind of know what we should be doing. What we should be doing is creating the organizations as platforms that find and develop the humans within them. So the purpose sits outside, and the organization's role is not to say how that purpose should be manifested. We should not try to control humans. We want as many people within this context to be actively working on that purpose as possible and create the environment where everyone is able to say, solving global poverty, I work on that every day. And I think about that with my creativity every day. And I have this amazing group of people around me. And we work on this on real things every day. And then we have these tools and these people who are guiding us, coaching us, leading us, developing us, and giving us the ability to take on these projects. And so they're switching the proper inversion of the pyramid to organizations that use the mechanism of human development, of human evolution, to achieve their goal. And so, if you can think about how you act and how you achieve your goals, and know that that's going to be mirrored and amplified, how can you make that an agent for your evolution and those around you? And know that this is you're talking about building a systemic organization. Know that a systemic organization is probably exponentially more effective at doing its job than a linear organization will be. This is the innovation practice everyone talks about in startups. This is what every startup is trying to do. They're trying to get as many creative people solving these problems as possible. So, the holder of that purpose is not necessarily some individual who calls it. It's everybody should be actively in there, and that's what you have to try to build. Come speak to me afterwards. I can help you do it. Well, I don't know. it's my business to learn this, but I don't really know how to do it, and I'm looking for teachers. So let's look at what a neural network looks like, and. And know that neural networks have been around since about 1947. So, like many other systemic practices, they've been ignored and ridiculed by most for a long time. But about 10 years ago, we started seeing enough computing power and the change in business models to produce enough data to allow neural networks to be taken seriously. And this shift from a linear to a non-linear technology has literally sent shockwaves across the globe. It is, you know, our technology has shifted an entire level. It, you know, it's not a, you know, a theoretical thing, it is. And so we have this gap between technology has hit a systemic level, we have to catch up. But neural networks work like they're modeled on us as a system, or our way we think, but also they are somehow incredibly simple and incredibly complex. Essentially, they're made up of a set of neurons that are connected to each other with weights, essentially. So data comes in one end, and all these weights, initially, the connections between the neurons are random. They are just randomized to begin with. Then you start feeding in something that says, this is a picture of, well, you send a bunch of pictures, images, and then it gets passed, then each of these might become a pixel in your picture. Data moves through, gets number is like a number between 0 and 1, gets multiplied, and then between, you might have many layers inside here, get multiplied again, changed, eventually it comes out, and then you say, great, what that was a cat. And it's just random data, random numbers, cat. And you do that thousands of times with different pictures of cats until this system, which has no logic, it's not programmed, it simply emerges by recognizing patterns. The system becomes better at recognizing cats than most humans, and it can do it at a scale with a speed that is unbelievable. So it can now recognize any language, translate any language to any other language, to recognize pretty much any voice that it's never heard and understand what it's saying. But there's no logic, there's no programming, there are no morals, there are no principles. It simply observes and it learns. So if that's the technology we are now at, and this technology in the hands of a linear organization might completely mess us up, but if we could get this technology into the hands of a systemic organization, that'd be great. But you may have been to some talks. You may realize that there are many people working on this problem of how do you create a systemic organization. And you might also know it's bloody hard. All right, there are no answers. It's not simple. But why don't we just look at the technology? Can we learn and mirror this technology, which we know we do mirror technologies anyway. So that model works. It works with relationships between things. Weighted relationships. They're not equal. Every relationship is dynamic and changing. So these kind of, we have this concept of roles and the fluid changing of roles. And some roles are important, some are not, and they change and they evolve. But the way in which we learn is through feedback. You push data in and you say, great, that was a nice experiment, that was a nice try. Here's what the answer could have been. Here's the data that says, this is what we were looking for. And then you adjust the weights a little bit up, a little bit down, and you try again. And then you say, that was good, a little bit out, try this. And we do that over and over again with feedback. Experimentation and feedback. Those are the essential components of how a neural network moves from linear to systemic. So the personal realization for me in this whole process was, I'm shit at feedback. But I've got to learn how to be better at that. And so I'm now, so what I urge you as an action, as something to do, is how can you include feedback? Just focus on feedback in everything that you do. I'm going to wrap up and get a little bit of feedback from you. These systemic tools, I really believe, may actually be completely required for us to become systemic organizations. Maybe we have to accept that to solve systemic problems, I think we completely have to accept that these systemic challenges like climate change require systemic tools and toolkits, systemic research. We need to learn how to measure in an academic way to provide the data that maps onto our values. Values are data, and what I've learned, values are our emotions. Well, data is our emotions, there we go. You know, we have to learn to measure because these work on measure and observation. So if we can bring in the academic understanding and the measuring, and we can heal this relationship with technology that says, I shouldn't measure stuff, my emotions aren't be there, or we had to learn how to get in there, then we can start to find the ally that will help us tackle these incredible systemic problems that require a completely new way of thinking. But we have some tools to help us. We're not alone in this. We have an ally, and we are building it right now. When the pupil is ready, the teacher has arrived. You know. So, but let's not make that teacher beat us over the head too much and then kick us out the door. You know. So there's some bad teachers. We need a good one. So anyway, that's my talk. We have a little bit longer to go and discuss, you know, some feedback for everybody. We're gonna. I've given you some cards, which you don't have to worry about what they mean. We can discuss them later if you'd like, when you give them back to me. But so now I'd like you to take 1 minute, just in silence with yourself. We had three great presentations that have made us think. Think about those for a moment, and then we will talk to the person next to you. So let's just 1 minute. That's about a minute. How much time do we have left until we're supposed to break?
We have half an hour.
Okay, we have half an hour. It'd be great if you didn't leave early and stayed for this bit, because this is also very useful. If you can take 5 minutes. 5 minutes is quite a long time, but we'll see. Turn to the person next to you, or approximately just two of us, or spread around, and share. You probably know the topic better than I do now.
Share.
Yeah. Well, your thoughts. How is this emerging for you? How can you feedback for yourself?
Okay, maybe it's a good idea to just write that down, the guiding question for this exchange, so we keep track.
I can use my guiding question.
Yep. Okay, fine. I think it's important. It's important to be clear on the question. Okay. Okay, so can you start concluding this conversation on the last presenter's talk? And if you would like to come in back into the circle. So for the remaining 25 minutes, I would like to, if you could just come back into the circle, that would be nice. yeah, of course, absolutely. So, for the last 25 minutes, my sense is we are not so many, and it might be really interesting to have a dialogue, in the sense of dialogue, meaning putting something in here and everybody listening, so it can be received and be taken up to have time to land on all the presentations that we heard. That would be my suggestion. I don't know if some of you would prefer smaller groups, but I think we could try this experiment. In terms of, we don't have to go round or anything, it's just, if you sense an impulse on contributing something here in the middle to any of the things that you've seen, I think please do so. And then it might be good to just not maybe immediately jump into the response, but also let that land and then have a bit slow down dialogue, but that might co-create something very interesting. So I'd open the floor to this, whatever you feel. Maybe we just take 1 minute to just get quiet and sense back into what you heard and what you sensed. So I put the mic in the middle. Or, yes, kind of talking stick.
So I heard a theme between Gail's presentation about climate change and Veronica's. Veronica, right? I think I called you Victoria before, I'm sorry. Which was one in terms of working with research, particularly if you have transdisciplinary teams and multiple different people that are operating perhaps at different stages, also in different quadrants, right? And also that same problem in dealing with climate change, that in both of these constituencies, you've got multiple worldviews, multiple levels in the room at the same time, right? And so the question is, as the integral facilitator of that process, how do we do that?
Well, I guess context is one of the things that needs to be recognized. There are multiple contexts that you work with in any transdisciplinary research, but you absolutely have to honor all of them. You don't impose your own idea of what the context might be, but you have to honor each one from each level as well. So each quadrant could be, you know, clustered with a whole bunch of contexts that are clustering around the problem from that perspective. So if we're talking climate change or global damage, period. So if you're in your context, right, then you have people in villages who are interacting with the natural world in a particular way from a particular developmental level, right? And then you have the militia coming in from a same developmental level, but using a different, obviously, or maybe a lower developmental level, right? So these cards. And this is so totally true about doing integral in universities. But these cards really brought this home to me, because some of you asked, well, what does this card mean? And without a context, it's hard to actually say what the card means. So we need to honor those contexts. And for that reason, you can't have one researcher doing it, right? So you need to have groups, and again, you need to have inter-level communication between both the researchers and the problem you're researching. So that was kind of my impression.
I would just say to follow on that, and to speak to your question, your inquiry, is the second part of. Well, a component of my PhD research is, if we understand that we're all, in a sense, these Russian dolls, and only certain reality is going to overlap and be disclosed amongst us, what is collaboration in regards to a hyperobject like climate change, given that? So it's a very interesting, that I don't know the answer to your question, but that's where it's headed, is like, I'm looking at a whole value chain, a global value chain for coffee that sources all over the world, but specifically in Guatemala. And at every actor on the chain, including the retailer, which is some Costco in North America, what would collaboration towards climate change look like, given our Russian dolls be as they are? But I was going to also say a theme that I think links to, what's your name again?
Peter,
what his work is asking of us, and it's similar to what I'm asking, is, you know, a hyper object like climate change, what is it asking of our evolution? and how can our evolution kind of meet it? So it's this back and forth. He's asking the same in regards to a technology such as AI. AI is our next iteration of the lower right quadrant, if I understand you correctly. And so in any sort of Marxist understanding of this, the mode of production, the lower right quadrant, is going to arise and correspond with our lower left consciousness. So let's be mindful and conscious with what we want it to do. Could it actually scaffold our consciousness and our evolution better than it currently is? And I really enjoyed your presentation, so thanks very much. And so that's a theme I heard too, and I'm not sure how that works for everybody else here. But
thank you. I also heard, I didn't hear the first presentation, but Peter, I'm deeply touched by, as you mentioned, is just by the way you posed the question to yourself and the way you started to go and inquire into your own question. And it really opened up a new area because, yes, just like, how to put it, I come from a systemic understanding of organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And many times my heart is painfully aware of how the human beings are caged in these organizational structures. I really feel them, and they feel that as well, as individuals in their own right. And in a sense, up till now, the way I related to the robot industry 4.0, all that stuff, was like, thanks God, I can understand, because at least human creativity came to the point when they create the robots, so the humans are uplifted from this burden of being projected onto as if they were robots. But actually you bring, you know, and then I brought in the ethical issue, you know, like, so what happens to the humans then if the people who run the organizations have the same mindset of, you know, gaining more money, what happens to us? So that was the question so far, living with me. And now you brought in this twist, that's the right word. And I am very much delighted. I really feel that's a question. So the way I put myself, and it relates to now you brought in with the climate change as well. So it seems that the quicker we learn to live in a collaboration or in whatever way as living systems, which assuming that they do not go against the evolutionary purpose, the more we might re-track the development of AI or help us to go into, with the mirroring of climate change and all that, into a higher level of consciousness, really. And I'm really getting excited about that, how to go do that now, because I come from the soul background, you know, of Peter Senge and system thinking and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, the network science and being Hungarian, very proud of Barabási and all his work. And now you bring in something very nice. I really like it.
Thank you, everyone. This is such a rich conversation. On that question of how can we come into a new kind of reflexivity with a hyper-object such as climate change that resists our current interpretations, feedback. How do we engage differently in inductive feedback loops? I think I'm thinking of where Gail just left off a few moments ago about what are the, we know that we can think transdisciplinarity, but we for the most part cannot enact it. I'm becoming curious after hearing all of you about some kind of a taxonomy which would make an object of methodological stratification by Russian doll or, you know, headspace, and make more legible for researchers the barriers to be removed or the bridges to be built?
For me, there were a couple of bold moments in this two sessions. Sorry, I missed the first one. You were saying something like, I had to note it because I can't remember it in English. With your worldview, you will choose the approach to the problem. Yeah, and if I start with the upper left worldview, it's a completely different approach, and maybe then from the systemic approach. And this perfectly fits now to the possibilities of technology. And this is also a bold statement: organizations build artificial intelligence, and not the other way around. And it says so much to me. And while you were having your speech, Veronica, and what is your name? Estelle. So I was so touched that you found yourself in what you basically describe analytically. So this was. So you connected maybe in the way like Frederic Laloux explained it to tomorrow in his speech, where he said, okay, they had the same story and they met 3 years later and they were connected. So these are the moments I like.
Yeah, something else I was reminded of also when you were talking about teams is that what I've heard about collective intelligence is that it's about feedback, but it's also if you want to have an intelligent network, it's not about the quality of the nodes, but about the quality of the connections, and especially the richness of the connections.
Well, it was... I took some time to phrase it, but for me, what would be an ally to my evolution, actually, and I hope ours, would be a technology that would help me to concentrate on the spring of a new humanity, which is generative and fully connected to the flow of life at the same time. And that means a transpersonal, to the transpersonal also, or via the transpersonal. That's what I need.
I find a connection, but not the left, but left brain. And the first was the child picture, and after the AI is that is coping our behavior. So the responsibility that, I'm not only responsible for my child as I'm raising her, but I'm responsible how do I deal with the technology as well, because that will copy my actions and I have more, thing for the rest. So that is a connection inside of me, that the responsibility of how dealing with anything.
I'll say one more thing if I can. I just wanted to speak to your question. What would an ally to evolution, my evolution, do? And we actually raised the question about AI with Ken Wilber on like January 3rd or something this year. And he made the really interesting point that every human being carries depth in the fact that we have atoms, we have all of evolution in us. So we have molecules, cells, all the way up. And so these programmers sort of sweep off the rational level and create an AI, and it's got none of the depth. And so, from that conversation, some of my friends who do work in this are trying to create algorithms that are, they're growing them like as if it was a baby and growing it up with depth. And I think that it would need to. If it's going to engage our evolution, it has to meet to some extent our depth, and without it, it's flat, and it has span, but it has no depth. So that's just a thought. I really loved your presentation, and so And I just want to also say that I was curious to know that they grouped our presentations as the new science, and yet it really feels like that. I mean, what we're playing in is really a transdisciplinarity. You know, it occurred to me, I don't work in climate change, I work in hyperobjects. And I do it with transdisciplinarity, I do it with this evolutionary perception. And so, you know, we really are. It's like, you know, like life follows advertising. You know, like they put that name on us, but it works.
I had a thought as we were talking afterwards about, again, so much of our focus is on the lower right because of the systems that have a life of their own. Even if we start them and we do it wrong, they keep going, right? So even climate change and all of that is a life of its own that we have kicked into being, right? And now it's impersonal, it keeps going, and so on. So we have that problem, and then we have the problem generally of humanity, where are we going? What's beyond our current sort of existential crisis as to who we are and how do we get along together? What's the next thing? And so I think we need to actually look at the upper left quadrant as well in all of this. We've just put so much attention on the lower right, lower left as well, getting along, but we tend to almost forget the upper left, except for like meditation or stuff, but you know, that's become superficial almost in the advertising. But if you think about the evolution of the robots, etc., that's going to have a huge impact on how we live, right, as human beings. And so thinking about a world with, let's say, guaranteed income and no jobs. So what you have is that death, right? And is it going to become transformational death? Because it's a total, all of a sudden, all your, however you were shaped before by organizations and traditions, all of that is kind of wiped away. Our jobs shape a lot of our lives, right? Now, if that's gone, then what's our purpose, right? Because normally our purpose is to do our job and pay our bills and all of that. Now, if that's gone, what is next? How is this going to affect each individual human being? That's a huge vacuum. And so are we going to totally die off and live in video game world? Or are we going to do something else? Now, Teilhard de Chardin talked about doing the spiritual evolution, so to speak, living in another sphere, if you like. And that may be part of it too, but how do we even know what's escapism and what's actually evolution? And so all these are questions like we'll be kind of free falling into this unknown territory, and while we're worrying about the things that we can touch, right, like the environment, ecology, and all of that, we better not forget about our own sanity.
I think the difference between escapism and reality is the generating something. It's actually the flow of life. Like if you're trying to escape, you stay in the inn and you never get out. And that's where the difference is, when you create something and you actually bring it to the world. Like,
it's the purpose, it's knowing what you want to create. That's a huge thing about it. If you suddenly have this generative vacuum, right? Sorry.
That's the thing. If you're in a completely different territory, all the rules that you knew to navigate by before are kind of irrelevant or just wiped out. So what is? How do you choose a purpose beyond that? You know, do you... you can take up knitting or a painting or whatever, but is that the, you know, there's got to be some creative purpose, right? And maybe you start with knitting, but you know, what's going to fulfill your whole life as an individual? I just find that a really scary kind of concept to contemplate, but I think we need to take it seriously. It's not... But you know, that's the card I hear. So
we have a few more minutes left. So there was.
No.
Okay.
Something was spoken that brought this up for me. I've been wondering. I read an article about the number of inventors who invented something from a good place, and they actually want to disown their inventions because of how human beings have misused their inventions. And that, to me, is a really big question. Okay, as creators, which we all are, and we deliver our babies to the world in whatever way that comes through us, and then what happens to them, and the sort of potential, we can use different language, but dark forces that can take them and misuse them. And we see that all the time. Like, that an example is the man who invented the Keurig coffee maker, and they use little plastic things, had no idea it was going to explode, and he wants to disown his invention because of the harm that the little plastic things are doing to the environment. That's just one example. So it's a question for me about we give up control, and then what, you know?
Ideas have consequences.
Yeah.
Well, and the ethics.
Thank you. That relates to something I was just going to briefly add. The creative and destructive forces in innovation, I think that's something that this group in particular can serve in the sense that how is the hyper object a gift that pulls us all into our highest possibility, whatever that might be.
You had still something?
I just wanted one note on the hyper objects that I handed out earlier, and that the tarot cards are. For me, they're an ally to my evolution. Each card is just a small change. It's the cards just represent changes. It's the book of changes is what the tarot is. So anyway, I handed them out as a possible prompt for contemplation, because what you do when you're looking at the tarot is saying, the cards say, what changes might I make to myself next? And that's, for me, was part of my what an ally for evolution could do. And I'm very interested in how do we build the organizations that guide us to make small changes.
Okay. I'm sorry, but we are at the end of this dialogue. I'd like to thank you very much. And it's a very, very interesting discussion. And yeah, just when you're there, you think like, oh, we need to go on. Okay, so I just would like to invite you to, for the conclusion, to just take another moment, 1 minute of silence for yourself, to just let it all land in you before you dash out to lunch. Okay. So thank you very much for having been here. Thanks again to the presenters.